Chapter 1. Marriage. In 1797, Creek Indian agent Benjamin Hawkins found himself on the receiving end of a generous offer, a bilingual Creek Indian widow for marriage, accompanied by three beautiful children. The woman was clean and paid the appropriate attention to white people. To enhance the offer, the mother also indicated that the marriage could be for the duration of his stay, or as much longer as I thought proper. Hawkins was a well-known and respected Indian agent. A former U.S. Senator and confidant of Presidents Washington and Thomas Jefferson, he spent almost 30 years in the Southeast undertaking extensive travels through the region to meet the Creeks, foster alliances, and forge enduring social ties. Perhaps, then, he should have jumped at the woman's offer. However, the flexibility of the arrangement did not appeal to his patriarchal sensibilities, and he delivered a lengthy reply indicating his objections. Whilst complimenting the woman on the appearance of her daughter and her children, he reminded her of the difficulties of such a union. He said, "I do not yet know whether I shall take one of my red women for a bedfellow or not, but if I do, it will be for a single night. She had a child, I shall expect it will be mine, that I may clothe it and bring it up as I please. If I take a woman who has sons or daughters, I shall look upon them as my own children." The offer appeared very bold in its approach, particularly as it came from the lips of the widow's mother. However, the mother demonstrated a fine level of political awareness and knowledge. Initially, the Creeks had undergone significant changes following the American Revolution. Political alliances shifted with frightening speed, and a man with Hawkins's connections could provide a little safety should American enemies come calling. Secondly, the mother was evidently accustomed to the concept of offering Indian offspring to pre-approved white males. In the third instance, the offer was designed to appeal to something customary among both Indian and white unions, temporary unions for specific purposes. In this case, the value of having Hawkins, an influential family member, is evident. The mother also took care to indicate that her daughter was accustomed to behaving appropriately, i.e., could perform white woman roles to satisfy a man of Hawkins's social standing. Her other daughter, after all, was married to Mr. Barnard, with whom Hawkins was currently residing, and had made a successful marriage. Her language skills were indicated, Uchi and Creek, and what white man could be without a good interpreter in the Southeast. Finally, she had three healthy and beautiful children, ensuring her fecundity and productivity. Simply put, the daughter had everything a white man could need or want whilst residing in Georgia: awareness of white social and marital customs, language skills, sexual experience, and an easy divorce should it be required. In exchange, some political assurances and a degree of safety were provided to help ensure the family's longevity during a political crisis. Colonial trade, warfare, and hostility formed the context for many Indian European marriages. At the end of the century in the Southeast, Americans faced many of the same social problems that the British had already encountered and subsequently defeated when dealing with the Mi'kmaq in Nova Scotia. While the United States struggled to assert dominance among its Indian neighbors, the British had found themselves earlier in the century attempting to reach some accommodation with the hostile indigenous peoples. In the Southeast, marriage could serve as a bridge between nations, and women would often enter into such unions willingly. Marriage for the Mi'kmaq was on far more selective terms. Unaccustomed to sharing space and land with the uninvited, the Mi'kmaq were unlikely to mingle with, far less marry, white British settlers. While the variety of marriages was mostly acceptable to white men during the upheaval and years of conflict of the 18th century, a new, non-British, all-American standard became necessary within the United States borders, befitting the beacon of civilization and democracy in the Western world. The Republic sought to integrate Indians into its vision of an industrious, civilized, and productive nation, peopled by independent, heroic artisans and their supportive wives and offspring. For American men, marriage by the end of the century was entangled with Euro-American ideas of masculinity and performances of gendered power. Combined with the desire for expansion and land, men swapped the defined social strata of the European for a vigorous, self-made man, master of his own land and family. This American was vigorous, manly, and direct, not a